Okay, good afternoon. We're going to try to keep things on schedule. So we're going to start. This is the second part of the energy, water, and environment sessions. I think our water symposium fit right in with the themes of all of this, and we have another water-related paper here right now with Kevin Orner, who is a PhD candidate in environmental engineering at the University of South Florida. And he's going to speak on environmental stewardship through recovering resources from wastewater.
Kevin. Well, good afternoon, everyone. I'm really happy to be here. This is my second ASA conference. My first one was last year. So I was really delighted to see that the topic this year was dealing with energy and water, because that was right up my alley as far as my dissertation research. So I'd like to share with you some things I've learned relating to water, energy, wastewater, and some of the sustainable development goals. So I'll just get started. So I'll just be going through just a little bit of background about myself, talk about some of the current research I'm doing, some future research, and then wrap things up at the end. To start, I just wanted to tell you a little bit about some of the people that have brought me here to where I am today. So I did my undergrad at the University of Wisconsin. I'm a proud Badger. I was really, one of my big role models was Pete Boscher, and he was the faculty advisor in Engineers Without Borders at UW, and he actually gave a talk at ASA in 2005. So I got involved. I was in aeronautical engineering at the time, and he talked about how we can use engineering as a way to address real-world needs such as water and sanitation. And that was really motivational for me to think beyond just engineering as something that makes a lot of money or, you know, is intellectually stimulating. He kind of opened my eyes to how you can, you know, be an engineer in a lot of different contexts. So unfortunately, he passed away in 2007, but before he passed, he was able to pass on a lot of information to me as far as what it means to be a Christian and an engineer in all parts of my life. So I thank him for his investment in me. I also went to the same church as Cal DeWitt, who many of you know. He's being honored next weekend at the Ausable Institute for his work in environmental stewardship. And Terry Morrison, he was honored with ASA last year. He was my coffee partner at 6 a.m. on Friday mornings every week. So I thank him just for his investment in me as well. So I've been in Tampa, Florida for 1 year for my master's degree back in 2008 and 2009, and I've been working my PhD since 2014. So I was drawn to university by Dr. James Mihelsik, the bottom row, second to the left. He's really big into sustainable development engineering. So he runs a program where master's students can spend 2 years out in the Peace Corps and is really big into integrating engineering with anthropology and with public health. I also like to thank Martin Price, who's here today. He's been my mentor through the Ausable Grad Fellows program. So I'm really a product of a lot of people who have invested in me, so I thank them all for their support. Just a little bit about some international experiences I have. I did the Peace Corps in Panama from 2009 to 2011, where I did water and sanitation work. I lived and worked with three different indigenous communities in the western part of Panama, working on water systems and sanitation coverage. And then next year, I'll be heading to Costa Rica for a Fulbright, and I'll talk a little bit more about that at the end of the presentation. So just a little bit of introduction about wastewater. Some of you may be very familiar with this, and some of you may not be very familiar. So basically, what goes down your toilet doesn't just disappear. It actually goes somewhere, and we need to think about what's in it and how we deal with it. So this is just a quick summary, visual representation, like everything goes down your sink, your bathtub, your washer, your dryer. It gets connected through tubing to a sewer network, and oftentimes that's underneath your street. And so all the different houses are often connected to this one sewer line that goes underneath the street, and that goes somewhere. And oftentimes in larger cities, that goes to a wastewater treatment plant, and then the wastewater treatment plant treats it to a degree where it can be properly released into our rivers or lakes. There's other cities that have combined storm drains and sewers, and those work well except when there's a lot of rain and then you have overflows of stormwater mixed with sewer water, and that becomes a big problem. So wastewater is actually mostly water, but this little red sliver is what we have to be worried about as environmental engineers. So that includes feces, pathogens, nutrients, cleaning products, pharmaceuticals, kitchen waste. There's more and more things that we have to worry about, and we have some older systems that may not be designed to remove all those things. So that little red sliver of stuff is what we really have to worry about. And how does this impact us? So we have some urban runoff that might be from stormwater that gets into our lakes and rivers. We're starting to think about what we have to do with agriculture and livestock runoff. That's a big source of nutrients such as nitrogen and phosphorus. We have our effluent from the wastewater treatment plants that you see at the top. Some people in rural areas might have septic tanks, and septic tanks are not perfect. They do leak, and there are problems with that. So, okay, you have nitrogen and phosphorus in your water. What's the big deal with that? When you have nitrogen and phosphorus, you get algae blooms. When the algae dies, it decomposes. And when it decomposes, it consumes the oxygen in the water. And when it consumes all the oxygen in the water, that has negative impacts on water quality and the fish that live there and a lot of the plants. So in one of the previous presentations, we saw the dead zone where the Mississippi River empties south of Louisiana, and there's just very little aquatic life that lives there. So there's really an impetus for us to see where all these nutrients are coming from and see what we can do to make sure they're not getting into our water. So that's what it looks like, and that's what we may be familiar with, but that is not the case for sanitation in all parts of the world. These were the two latrines that I used during my 2 years as a Peace Corps volunteer. The one on the left is a latrine made of just materials that we found around my Peace Corps site. So you see some like dry leaves from a tree. You see some pieces of felled trees at the bottom. We would cut those down, and those would be like the base of the floor for the latrine. And places like this often rely upon government projects for infrastructure, such as houses and latrines. So halfway through the service, we had a local representative who said, hey, I'll be running for an election next year. I'd love to get your votes. You know, here's a project to help encourage you voting for me. So on the right is a latrine that has like a concrete base, and then it's made of aluminum and some wood support. So in the developing world, you might find latrines and other types of sanitation than just the sewer coverage you would find here in the U.S. So here's what it looks like across the U.S. and across the world. If you look at the green colors, that might be more of what you're used to. So the darker green is sewer coverage, and the lighter green is septic. So the greens are more of what you're used to. If you look at where are the blues, the dark blue is pit latrines, and some of the lighter blues include either some sort of other sanitation practice or even open defecation. So if you see where all the greens are, you see a majority of the green in the U.S., most of Europe, if you look at Australia, and even parts of South America. But then you see a lot of blues, especially in sub-Saharan Africa and definitely in parts of Asia. So when we think of trying to treat wastewater and what the sanitation looks like, it's not just big centralized treatment plants everywhere. There's a lot of different sanitation practices that we have to look at. So this ties into what Dorothy talked about earlier in today's session, that we have these sustainable development goals that kind of tie together some of these issues that international communities have to face. And the logical one that's the most direct tie is goal number 6, which is clean water and sanitation. What I'm here to argue today is that when we think of sanitation, that there are other sustainable development goals that tie into it, particularly zero hunger. You know, what if we used resources from sanitation and how it connects to our food and agriculture? There are ways that we can use wastewater, sanitation, in relation to energy, and also into goals 11, 12, 13, sustainable cities, responsible consumption, and even climate action. So I'm here today to argue that, you know, when we think of sanitation, it's more than just Sustainable Development Goal 6. Some of you may have seen these statistics before, but when we think of sanitation, this is a real issue for a lot of people. 2.4 billion still lack access to proper sanitation. There's 280,000 diarrheal deaths annually, and those could be reduced by 35% by improved sanitation. So sanitation is a big issue. It affects a lot of people, and if we do it properly, we can do a lot of great things in having a lot of healthy people. So wastewater previously was considered as, okay, we want healthy people, we want a healthy environment, so we're just going to remove that small percentage of red stuff that's causing us trouble. But there's a new paradigm that's emerging. So instead of viewing wastewater as a waste to be removed, it's now considered to be a resource that can be recovered. So you may see a shift into wastewater treatment plants now being called water resource recovery facilities to try to get across this idea that wastewater, even though it has waste in the name, it's not just a waste, that there are lots of beneficial things in it. And that includes nutrients, energy, and water. So for me, when I was thinking about, you know, what makes sense for me as a vocation, for me this related directly to being a Christian. So some of you brought this up before, Genesis 2:15, to protect and serve the earth. We also view the environment and creation as one way that we see God's beauty and how we relate to God. Psalm 19 talks about the sky above proclaims his handiwork. And for me, this also relates to like resurrection, just being like what was once considered something that was waste and to be discarded, that we can actually see the value in it. So a little bit about research in this area. So this is more on the urban scale. So because we were previously considering wastewater as a waste, we wanted to develop a tool that viewed wastewater as a resource and something to be recovered, and that's not just at a wastewater treatment plant. So we thought about different ways that we can recover different resources in wastewater. There's three different scales. There's building, community, and city. So city is what you would think of as a normal wastewater treatment plant. So what's the benefit of doing it at a different scale? So for example, if you did it at the building scale, you're dealing with urine, and urine has the most concentrated nitrogen and phosphorus. So rather than dilute something in order to try to make it more concentrated at the end, what if you just took the source at its most concentrated form? So there's a lot of research being done on how you can recover nutrients and energy directly at the building scale. And also at the community scale, a lot of people are looking into reclaimed water. So for example, if you have a golf course, you want to irrigate your golf course and you need to put fertilizer on it. So what if you did a small amount of treatment to remove pathogens from the wastewater, but left in the nitrogen and phosphorus? And then you could use the water with the nitrogen and phosphorus, not pipe it all the way down to the treatment plant, not pipe it all the way back to the golf course, but do some sort of treatment at the community scale. And something that I'm doing for my research at the city scale is looking at ways to use anaerobic digestion to recover methane, energy, and also there's a newer technology called struvite precipitation that recovers nutrients in the form of a fertilizer. So one paper that was just recently published, you don't have to look too far into all the letters and symbols there, but basically what we did is we came up with 10 parameters that utilities might consider as far as, hey, if we want to do some sort of nutrient management, what technologies would we use? So if you're working for a utility, you may not have lots of money for research and development and trying to figure out what are all the new technologies. So we put together a little matrix saying, okay, what do you care about? Do you care about aesthetics? Do you care about money? Do you care about how much time and resources you have for operation and maintenance? And then we basically graded lots of different technologies. So based on the utility's priorities, they could get an idea of, hey, here are some of the technologies that you should be considering. And then for my dissertation research, one location that we're looking at for nutrient management is called the side stream. So basically when you go through primary treatment and secondary treatment to get rid of carbon, you often send all this sludge to an anaerobic digester. And the digester, you get methane gas, but you also get these solids and liquids that have all this nitrogen and phosphorus. And especially the liquid has so much nitrogen and phosphorus, they can't discharge it. So what ends up happening is you're cycling this liquid effluent with nitrogen and phosphorus all the way back to the head of the plant, and you're treating these nutrients over and over and over again. So why don't we use this as an opportunity to take concentrated nitrogen and phosphorus and do some sort of nutrient management treatment. So one option that we're looking at in the lab at USF is recovering struvite. So struvite is magnesium ammonium phosphate. And when you have wastewater, it typically has sufficient nitrogen and phosphorus, so you often add a little bit of magnesium, and that recovers about 90% of the phosphorus in the wastewater and about 20% of the nitrogen. So then the idea is like, okay, if we want to remove as much nitrogen and phosphorus as we can, we already removed most of the phosphorus, what do we do with the remaining nitrogen? So one technology that's still in development that we're looking at in the lab is a microbial fuel cell. So basically what we're trying to say is, a microbial fuel cell is a way to get energy out of wastewater. So when we think of wastewater treatment, we think of, okay, it needs to be run by a power plant, you need lots of energy input. There's already energy in water. What if we could use some biological and chemical reactions to get energy out of wastewater? So we're looking at both struvite precipitation and a microbial fuel cell to get a fertilizer and energy out of the side stream. So it has the double benefit of getting beneficial products such as nitrogen, phosphorus, and energy out, and you also have the benefit of not needing extra chemicals and energy when you're cycling your nutrients back through the main part of your plant. So this is what our lab setup looks like. So this is at the 100 milliliter scale, and we have partnership with Hillsborough County to make this up to the 1 liter scale. And hopefully this technology will be something that will be implemented in the next 5 or 10 years at the wastewater treatment plant scale. So far in our lab research, we've been able to recover about 20% of the nitrogen and struvite precipitation and about 90% of phosphorus. So that's about what we've seen in our literature reviews. And then we've been able to remove about another 70 or 80% through the microbial fuel cell. So this is still in development and we're still ironing out some kinks in the lab, but hopefully we can make this a technology of the future for wastewater treatment plants, with the idea being, what if the wastewater treatment plant itself was net energy positive, that we could get energy from wastewater and run the plant with the wastewater instead of needing some external energy source. And a little bit of the research we're doing in rural settings. This was mentioned in one of the previous talks of, okay, we've got all this nitrogen and phosphorus and carbon, you know, what do we do with it? So this is more looking at scenarios for the developing world. And we basically did a mass balance with nitrogen and carbon and phosphorus for different sanitation technologies. So we did it with sewered with treatment, a sewer without treatment, and then got into like the pit latrines, the composting latrines, to see where can we get the most nitrogen and phosphorus recovered from these treatments. And what we figured out is that without treatment, a lot of these technologies, for example, a pit latrine, if you're got all these feces and urine in a pit and you cover the pit, you're not recovering any of the nutrients from the feces or the urine. But there's something called fecal sludge management. This is especially prevalent in urban areas where space is limited. So basically you can use manual or mechanized excavation of the pit contents So that way the pit can be reused, but you also have this fecal sludge. So that's a pretty messy job, right? So they're still coming up with treatments as far as how can you recover fertilizer or energy and make this to be a small business opportunity, especially in places like India or Latin America, where this can be a job creation opportunity. You're allowing yourself to reuse the pits and you get some beneficial products from the contents. And a little bit into future research. Next year, I'll be spending 10 months in Costa Rica. So what I'll be doing there is they have pigs and cows, and pigs and cows defecate. So what they do is you can either spray out your pens and you can discharge that directly. But in this area where I'll be looking at in the Monteverde Cloud Forest, they built 10 tubular digesters. So basically what happens is the effluent from the pig and the cow pens, you hose them down, you've got the water mixed with all the feces, they go into a tubular digester, and what happens is there's this chemical reaction that happens where the carbon from the manure gets converted into methane, and the methane gets stored in this big plastic bag here. And then you can connect that through valves and have that, for example, to run stoves on campus. So there's one big digester at the University of Georgia Costa Rica campus where I'll be working, and the general manager there has also worked with 9 local farmers to install these tubular digesters for their cow and pig farms. So it's generally 4 to 6 pigs, so there's not too many. But currently for these tubular digesters, they do a great job at converting the organic carbon into methane, but there's very little nitrogen or phosphorus treatment that occurs. So I'll be looking into building a struvite precipitation reactor. So we take the liquid effluent from the digester, we put it into a reactor like this, you stir it, you add magnesium, and it converts the nitrogen and phosphorus from a liquid form into a solid form. So this is a benefit in that just in case you're not using the liquid effluent directly on your agriculture, if you're just washing it away, this is a chance where you can store it, you can sell it. There's basically just a lot more mobility and economic opportunities to recover the valuable thing from the wastewater instead of discharging it. Costa Rica is a great place for this because they do not treat 95% of their wastewater. They do a great job at drinking water coverage, but their sanitation coverage is lacking there. And they're starting to see some eutrophication and algae blooms where a lot of this agriculture is discharging. So in order to protect their ecotourism, they're trying to eliminate some of these nutrients at their source. So just to conclude, wastewater treatment previously was wastewater is in the removal business. But my argument that wastewater isn't a waste to be removed, it's a resource that should be recovered. So just think of new as a new paradigm, with N being nutrients, E being energy, and W being water. This also has the benefit of achieving multiple sustainable development goals, not just water and sanitation, but also goals relating to food and to energy and to climate change. And it also fulfills our role as stewards of God's creation. So with that, that's my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions? Kevin, go ahead and just call on you.
Sure.
You like.
Yes.
Can you recycle the magnesium?
So magnesium is currently lacking. So we're looking at what are sources of magnesium that are local. So magnesium can be found in salt. It's found in wood ash. So basically, we're looking for magnesium. We don't have magnesium in excess. Yeah, Terry.
So it seems to me, and I think I've read some articles about this, that there's a sort of a psychological issue with recycling wastewater. I mean, in principle, we should take the wastewater and then, make it potable drinking water.
Yes.
Right, under the proper treatment. So have you thought, or does your department or the people you work with this idea, and how do you change people's minds about how they use wastewater?
Yes, that's a very important part of this question and debate, and that's something that often, as an engineer, gets overlooked. Something that our department stresses is that we have like the triple sustainability bottom line, and that not only is the economic, but also the environmental and the social. So we partner with public health and anthropology to try to get at, okay, why do people have the habits they do, and you know, what does effective behavior change look like if that's appropriate? So that is a big issue. So like the question is, can you treat wastewater to a degree where it's of drinking water quality, or do you rather discharge your wastewater in a river, have it flow downstream, and then use that same water that has the wastewater discharge and then treat it? So for a lot of people, they're like, okay, we want to have that river as a slight intermediate. But then you could argue, you know, does that do much in terms of water quality? Yes?
This may be stupid, but does any of this research work on trying to help restore the groundwater?
Yeah, so one of the ways for recovery here is nutrients, energy, and water. So my research focuses primarily on the nutrients and energy, but that water is an important piece, especially in, okay, if we have a lot of impermeable area here, we want to have groundwater recharge, you know, where it would normally be infiltrating. So that, my research doesn't focus on that, but that is a very important piece.
They are working on it?
Yes, that's very important. Yes?
So you when you talked about that red strip, you know,
yep.
The things that aren't water and the wastewater, medications was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we get those medications out so that when we're recycling this water that we're not putting those back into the environment? And then the other question I have is, I think they were doing research on this a long time ago, using sewage effluent as a fertilizer, but then they realized that there was a lot of heavy metal in there, and that was causing issues with the crops.
Yeah.
So does what you're doing get rid of the heavy metals?
Yeah, so the first question, remind me again, was...
Medications.
Oh, medications. So most of the older wastewater treatment plants, they weren't considering medications and pharmaceuticals in their design, so it really doesn't do much as far as treating it. So most of what comes in as far as medications does go out. In fact, a lot of wastewater treatment plants didn't really consider nitrogen or phosphorus to be an issue, so they're primarily treating for carbon and not even for nitrogen and phosphorus. So there's a lot of newer technologies being developed, like one technology is called ion exchange, where you're trying to basically to have these pharmaceuticals or medicines attach onto something and really remove that surface so the pharmaceuticals are no longer present. But the reality is that there really isn't much treatment going on for medications at this point. But as we develop newer technologies, hopefully that will improve. And as far as heavy metals, my research won't look into that particularly, but that is a concern because you're wanting to try to provide the benefit, you know, of this fertilizer, but you also need to look at, okay, you know, are there pathogens present? Are there heavy metals present? So hopefully that research will address that too. Thank you. Yes?
I came a little late, so I don't know if we have covered it. This wastewater recycling is used by astronauts. Is any of your work involved with how they use their wastewater in space?
With what organization?
Astronauts.
Oh. I know astronauts, I think, relating to the question over here about reusing water. I know, for example, astronauts, they only have a limited amount of water, so they have to reuse everything. As far as this research, this is primarily, I don't think astronauts would use this type of technology.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.